Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Rabona podcast. Once again, I'm Musa Kwonga, joined by Ryan Hun and Michael De Silva to discuss the biggest game of the weekend, Spurs-Liverpool, Liverpool-Spurs. Michael, let's get straight into it. I'm sorry, Michael.
Oh, no.
Was that unfair? It was unfair to start with.
That was really mean. No,
it's okay. It's okay. I've had just about enough time to get used to it. Yeah, it was tough to take. Obviously, as a Spurs fan, it was a good performance for a lot of the game. They did so well to claw their way back into it and stem Liverpool, because Liverpool were superb in the first half. But yeah, obviously to throw it away at the end like they did, I think Hugo Lloris, it's about time that Tottenham seriously thought about his long-term position at Spurs, because he's made several errors that have cost them in big games. And, you know, it's hugely disappointing because Spurs had a big advantage over the other teams below them. And now there's four teams chasing two Champions League places.
And just so unnecessary and self-inflicted the error, wasn't it? I mean, it was that he seemed to fall. He fell at the same time he was trying to maybe parry it. And in the act of falling, lost his balance and knocked it away.
Yeah, I don't know. He had to catch it. I mean, the ball wasn't moving fast. He had to just grab it and hang on to it. But if he is going to elect to punch it or parry it in that position, it has to be way out of danger. And then Alderweireld could have done more, but he kind of got his feet in a mess. But by that time, it was kind of too late.
Can I kind of sound harsh about Lloris quickly? All keepers make howlers, right? That happens a little. But Lloris does them at the worst possible times.
Yeah.
Almost cost France qualification for the World Cup.
Yeah.
France were cruising in the World Cup.
Against Sweden.
Yeah, right. France were cruising in the World Cup final. They were 4-1 up, cruising, and then he made a horrendous error.
Yeah.
He makes these mistakes when it's almost like, I don't know if it's concentration or
I don't know if he deals with it? Now it's become a confidence thing, because it's happened several times. And I feel like he goes into games trying to do his best, but almost knowing that he has that error in him, and that has eroded his confidence big time. But you need your goalkeeper to be consistent. I was at Spurs Dortmund at the start of March, and Dortmund's in Dortmund, and Lloris made two or three absolutely fantastic saves. He really did play a huge part in Spurs getting into the quarterfinals of the Champions League. But for every great performance, there's going to be a howler like this. You can't legislate for that. And Spurs have a really, really good second-choice keeper in Paolo Gazzaniga sitting on the bench. He's from the same town, by the way, as Pochettino.
All right.
In Argentina. And he, whenever he's come into the team, he played against Arsenal in the Cup, and he was absolutely superb in that game. And I think Spurs, or Pochettino specifically, needs to make a tough decision on Lloris now.
Time for changing the guard, maybe.
He has quite a worried face, Hugo Lloris.
He does.
He looks very worried all the time. He kind of looks like he's, every time the ball goes near him,
it's going to happen again.
Oh no, the ball's coming towards me.
I draw a bit of a contrast here with, I know it's either end of the pitch, but Gonzalo Higuain retired from Argentine national duty. And when he retired, he left a really mournful statement. He was like, at least you haven't got to worry about me anymore, to that effect.
Oh.
And I just feel like these players carry responsibility so heavily. And I think, you know, we had a chat before, Ryan, about this on the previous podcast, I think, where you said, you know, you blame FIFA to some extent, because FIFA makes
us... For Lloris's mistakes.
Well, no. You made the point that FIFA makes us forget that these players are human.
Yeah.
And when we see them make these howlers, we're like, you know, actually, that should happen more often. in a high pressure match, like when I see great players or elite players make these terrible mistakes, it reminds you just what the scrutiny's like, you know. Just
but goalkeepers know what they're signing up for. I mean, their mistakes are analysed in far more detail. And if an outfield player makes a big mistake, there's a far more chance of them getting away with it without it being a direct reason for a goal. Mm. However, I don't have that much sympathy.
No, it's not so much an excuse as justification of that. It's more like when you see a golfer miss a 6-foot putt. Maybe it's a similar like the yips. Like, you know, or sometimes when you see a player, sometimes you see a striker. Well, that's it. Look at Karius in the final Champions League. When you see the ball coming and it's not even moving, but you freeze because in that moment it's all too much. And I think it's just fascinating that these elite players still have these moments of complete, you know.
Yeah, implosion. I mean, there's things like that that you can allow, if you like, or understand. But also, there's some very basic stuff that keepers do that I can remember our goalkeepers getting trained in when we were like 10, 11 years old. Actually, Alisson got away with one.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Early in his time, yeah.
No, in the game in the weekend where he, I think it was Kane, had a left foot shot or right foot maybe, and Alisson just parried it straight out to the like the penalty spot, and Eriksen followed up. And if it wasn't for Andy Robertson getting a foot in, it would have been a...
There was also another moment in the first half where he misjudged a long ball towards his penalty box and Ali almost nipped in.
Yeah.
I think Becker's kind of, he's an accident waiting to happen.
But
the thing I'm talking about is just like the direction of where you, if you can't handle it, because it's impossible to handle some stuff. So it was always, you know, where you push the ball away to. And I think that was the main thing about Lloris's error, was if he suspected that he couldn't have handled it, he could have pushed it elsewhere.
But that's one of the first things you learn as a goalkeeper.
Exactly. That's my point.
Like, he didn't make a decision, did he? Do you remember like there was an era? I mean, there was definitely an era when football changed, when you watch goalkeepers go from catching it to parrying it. And I think it started the Italian football. You see people like Pagliuca. You'd be like, he could have caught that. And he would just smack it. Like, he would punch it 20 yards clear. You're like, what is he doing? But then after a while, you'd realise that it was a site, there was a method to it. He would angle it, he would punch it, and he wouldn't punch it straight back down the pitch. He'd punch it out to the wings. Mm. You start a counter or just get it out of the danger zone in a really clever way.
Yeah. This was the thing that you saw a lot of the old school pundits have a real problem with when it started creeping into the Premier League, where it was commonplace on the continent for years where keepers would punch the ball. Mm. And then how many times have we heard an ex-pro on a panel just being like, he needs to catch it. Why is he punching it? Why is it punching it? And you've seen in this scenario while keepers do punch it, there's a reason for punching it.
Yeah.
Because if you punch it, it's miles away from the goal.
Yeah.
But, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that UK football's dismissed something that was actually very valid.
Yeah, I mean, with Lloris, I've noticed since the start of 2018 was the start of his, I don't know what you want to call it, his...
Decline, maybe?
Well, descent.
It's harsh. Well, harsh. Yeah, he's
decline's a bit, well, maybe it is accurate. Mm. I don't know. He is 32. Goalkeepers can go on a bit, but yeah, I mean...
With him, it's not age, though, is it? It's something else. It's concentration.
Not an age thing.
It's not with Lloris.
No,
because
way.
He's always had that rick in him.
Yeah.
He's always had... It was like the Barthez thing at United. Barthez, you never knew. And from early in his career, Barthez could play a blinding game, look at the World Cup semi-final against Croatia, but then he would do what he did at Highbury against Arsenal.
The first time I really noticed Lloris, a big proper howler in a big game, was against Manchester City at the Etihad. Spurs got absolutely hammered, 6-1 I think it was, 6-0 a few years ago. And it was the worst clearance ever, like just straight to a City player and they just scored. And okay, that happens, but that didn't happen to Lloris. Lloris was never that guy, you know, his distribution was always really good. And that was the first time I that was probably 2016, I would say. I don't know. But that was the first time when I really, started to question Lloris. And then from 2018, start of 2018 onwards, I started to know the second half of the 17-18 season, he started to make a few more errors. And then, I don't want to make too much of the
The problem is it's these margins, and you make it is important because we saw Sissoko through on goal, should have scored and put Spurs 2-1 up. And, you know, the game comes down to these margins. And you look at Spurs, they've lost, I think, 10 games in the league this year. They don't draw many. Yeah. And they lose marginal games.
More than a quarter of their games.
And this is the most damning indictment of Spurs. And this is about, I think, investment in squads as well. Spurs are proving the danger of Levy's lack of investment in crucial areas. Because, frankly, you need to have a squad where Lloris is more challenged for his position. You need to have a squad where you've got someone better than Sissoko.
Well, I don't disagree with that point generally.
Yeah.
I think with Lloris, it's slightly different because he genuinely does have competition. He's got Gazzaniga, who is very, very good and needs to get his chance in a Premier League start. Michel Vorm as well is, you know, most clubs don't have a second choice keeper who's as good as him, or the third choice keeper now.
Yeah.
But I do take your point generally that lack of investment at crucial times has cost Spurs. And if they finish sixth this season, which is entirely possible, Levy's the man you've got to look at.
Especially given some of the football they've played. They've played some great stuff this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they could easily finish third again. I mean, they've got now a huge game against Crystal Palace at home at the new stadium. I mean, they wouldn't really have wanted to go into that game with such pressure on them, because they've now lost 4 in 5, and that's the worst run of Pochettino's career at Spurs.
They've not won a Premier League game since the 10th of Feb, and there's only one team with worse form at the moment, and that's Fulham.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Which is not great.
They didn't play for 3 weeks, just to, to defend them a little.
They played for the other four.
Poor Michael.
I know maths.
Well, look, I'm trying to look on the bright side.
Also, like, we have to have a quick little bit of focus on Liverpool, because that is enormous for them. And, you know, they'd lost that game. Very different picture. Even if they'd drawn it. But now City probably have to get something at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And United have not been actually in thrilling form of late. But there'll be a tough proposition at Old Trafford.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the title race, I think, you know, if Liverpool... You know, City could have gone into their game in hand against Cardiff. A win would have taken them 4 points clear. Instead, Liverpool are now 2 points ahead of them.
Shout out to Bernardo Silva, just doing the Lord's work. That man is just like...
That game was weird, though. The City-Fulham game was odd. It was like a very slow pace.
It felt like an end-of-the-season game.
Pre-season game, yeah.
Do you know what it felt like? You know when the sun first comes out in Berlin? Like, you know, after the winter, and you go for that first, like, really boozy session with your mates. It was like that. It was, you know, those days, those afternoons just stretch on endlessly.
Yeah.
It was like that. Because they got two quite early goals, and then they just knocked it about.
Yeah.
But no one really... Yeah,
which Fulham, you can kind of do.
Yeah.
It's like Fulham have accepted their fate already.
Well, I think they're going to be the next team to go down. Huddersfield are already down, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Before we move on fully from Liverpool Spurs, I think from a Spurs point of view, it's worth pointing out that they deserved a point at least. Mm. So looking at this game in isolation, I don't think it's all doom and gloom, because you're essentially losing to the side who is on course for their highest points tally ever in the top flight and still might not win the league.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's a weird season. I think it's the culmination of the last five Premier League games. The only point they got was to Arsenal at home, which they were lucky to get, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Out of those five games that you mentioned, the performance against Liverpool was the best.
Yeah, definitely.
There is some hope going forward, but you've got to look at, you know, the race for those final places, Champions League places. Spurs do not have the momentum. United do. And you'd have to back them at this point.
And we're recording ahead of Arsenal Newcastle.
Yeah.
And if Arsenal win that game, Arsenal go third, which is
wild.
Mind-blowing.
Yeah. Which is more, I mean, of course, Arsenal have deserved to be where they are, but Spurs collapsing, Chelsea collapsing earlier in the season.
Dude, I hope they go third, just so people will be forced to say nice things about Emery, especially certain fan channels, which I shall not name here.
Just give it right until the end of the season. Should we take a break and then do other games?
Yeah, let's take a break.
Have we given Neil Robertson enough praise?
We should give Andy Robertson a bit more praise.
I mean, Neil was. He was like Andy's. Was he like his uncle, so his spiritual godfather? Yeah, I think Andy Robertson has had the most assists by any fullback in a Premier League season. It's like 9. I think that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, just a tremendous player at both ends. And actually, can I say this in highlighting the role of the fullbacks? Fullbacks that can actually defend as well, because we've seen both ends of the spectrum this year in the Champions League. We've seen Marcelo and being exposed, but also in La Liga, and we've seen the danger of having fullbacks who don't have the strength in defending. Mm. But this sort of new generation, Lucas Hernandez moving to Bayern. Mm. Bayern, as ever, ahead of the curve, signing him for €80 million—a huge amount. I think maybe a record for a fullback. A left back.
Yeah.
Andy Robertson's been amazing, and Wan-Bissaka at Crystal Palace. This is kind of the era of fullbacks who can do it all, really.
Yeah. And it, you know, needs to work in a system where, a fluid system where the central midfielders can drop and the centre backs can spread wide to, yeah, to cover them when they go forward. Andy Robertson was playing like a wide forward at times, yeah, yesterday. It was amazing. And his defending, I mean, you mentioned earlier, Ryan, his block on Eriksen, that was great. And also, we haven't even mentioned yet Van Dijk's...
Can I quickly say, I mean, I know that Eric Abidal listens to this podcast. Well, he probably doesn't. But yeah, just to say that what Robertson's doing is nothing new. Abidal did that. Abidal had that amazing ability to go central and let the fullbacks pile right up or the centre-backs go forward.
Can I just say, if Eric Abidal is listening to this podcast and he needs an intern on his role at Barca, just let me know what email address I can send my CV to.
Sorry, I just had to mention Abidal because I saw him doing, I know it's sound like a silly comparison, but there's a moment when Robertson went inside and made a great block, and that was exactly what Abidal would do.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, let's not get it twisted. Like, he's not, Andy Robertson isn't revolutionising the fullback role. Mm. He's just a really good fullback.
Yeah. But also,
a really good left back.
But it's not really about the personnel, it's about
the responsibility.
System.
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. I mean,
taking,
like,
responsibility centrally.
Yeah. I'm going to mention someone who probably gets overlooked and is quite underrated, but someone like Nacho Monreal, that's a really key part to his game as a left back. He's very good defensively and very good coming in centrally. And it actually, there was a real change in that game, in his game, when he played a bit of time at centre back for Arsenal, you know. But I mean, you've seen it a lot now. There's people like Laporte who can play left back and centre back. But yeah, Andy Robertson. DJ Andy Robertson, he's such a DJ, I swear.
Yeah,
he is. She's got pre-record me, radio show.
What, Northern Soul?
No, I reckon he's a house DJ.
And that's too obvious. I think he had an uncle who was really into Northern Soul and who was just like picked up the records off him.
But he's Scottish, isn't he, Andy Robertson? So maybe he's...
That's the curveball, exactly. They surprise you, those lot. They surprise
maybe
you.
Maybe he's surprisingly like an extremely rare funk collector. Just only plays funk 45.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. I reckon he's like that left field.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. We should probably go for a break.
Yeah, let's go for a break.
Let's do it.
Send us your mix.
DJ. Before we get into Cardiff Chelsea, I just want to say, we did talk about DJs. I just can't wait for the day in the social media era that someone actually drops a mixtape just after a big game. That would be incredible. I mean, I'm just waiting for it. All eyes on me. It's the perfect moment.
Oh, no.
Anyway, Cardiff Chelsea. Oh, shocking, shocking result for Cardiff.
Neil Warnock is not a happy bunny.
I mean, he's not a man that elicits the greatest sympathy at best times. But as Pilicueta's winner was, it was offside.
Well, it wasn't even the winner. Well, it was kind of the winner, but it was the equaliser.
Yeah.
As Neil Warnock rightly said, he's 2 yards offside.
For once, I'm with Warnock on this.
It was awful.
And he let fly at Sarri as well at full time.
Yeah, I think he was just really angry about the situation. But the thing is as well, Cardiff should have had 2 penalties. They had 2 absolutely nailed on penalties.
Yeah.
And also, I think Chelsea should have had a penalty. So, poor Cardiff.
Yeah, they deserved a lot more there.
Yeah, I mean, well, Chelsea had much more of the game and they were much better in terms of controlling the game, but 2 penalties and that should have been given against you and an offside equaliser in the 84th minute. That's hard to take.
Yeah, and Cardiff have been on a good run up until this point.
Yeah, they're all right.
But the Emiliano Sala thing is just, you know, both on and off the field, what kind of impact does that have?
Mm.
When you have a player who's meant to come in and help out, that happens. Yeah. And then the haggling over the fee, which has just been really ugly from all corners. The kind of mood that creates in and out.
I mean, there's a thing come out now saying that the pilot might not have been
licensed
to fly at night, which is a real...
How do you... I mean, you know, it's all second guessing, but I mean... I mean, it's a horrifying tragedy. It's one of those moments people look back on for years and be like, what could and should be done differently? And I just hope that one thing that people learn is when you are basically getting a player across, just wrap them in cotton wool.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Just,
I mean,
just put them on a commercial flight.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no words for it.
Anyway.
But yeah, brutal for Cardiff on and off the field.
Yeah, but there are signs that it could be galvanising them for this final stretch, you know?
Yeah, I think they might be down though.
To be honest though, I mean,
it's tight though.
Yeah.
I think.
Well, Southampton won against Brighton, which was a huge result.
Brighton are the team to watch in terms
could get
of
dragged back into it,
in terms of
relegation.
Distracted
by the cup. Or?
They, I mean, they've got this cup semi-final coming up. I mean, they could be the new Wigan.
I'm pretty sure they've got Arsenal coming up soon, though, so that'll be a nailed on 3 points.
The way those teams just... but the way certain teams just plummet. You know, like those teams, Ipswich did it with the UEFA Cup.
Yeah.
A thin squad and a team that's been struggling and it's been, frankly, it's been coached beyond its means.
Exactly. And teams like Brighton, really, they almost have to make a decision. Like, do we go for a cup run? Well, if you're eighth or ninth and you're safe, then yeah, do it. If you're fighting to survive, then you don't have the squad for both. And I feel a bit sorry for Hughton in some ways. I think he's caught between a rock and a hard place.
He's always coached out of his mind. Chris Hughton has always brought...
in a hard place.
A Brighton... That's the name of the podcast. A Brighton rock and a hard place.
Hi, everyone.
Oh, no. I'll be here all week. You literally will. You live here.
I do live here. I might leave the house at some point.
Yeah, don't count on it. Oh, my goodness.
So Brighton might slip into it.
Yeah.
Burnley are there. So I think Southampton are going to be all right. I mean, we said as soon as Hasenhüttl took over that we thought they'd be all right.
Although they haven't climbed as clear as I thought they would by this stage.
Yeah, but I also think that...
The relegation.
They had a run of games where they looked absolutely knackered, where they need a pre-season under Ralph.
But if you look at the form table, they're ninth, I think, in the Premier League. And if Hasenhüttl can just keep them up, I think next season should be a lot more
more
comfortable for them.
They're 5 points clear of Cardiff now, Southampton. Yeah. They're level on points of Burnley, having played a game less. So Cardiff and Southampton have a game in hand on Burnley.
Okay, so Burnley are in trouble a bit.
Yeah, I mean, Burnley won, but they've only won one of their last five. Southampton have won three of their last five. So it's getting tight down there.
Yeah, and Fulham, I believe, could be down as early as this week.
Yeah, I think so.
Goodness me.
That's a weird one, Fulham, because they spent a lot of money in the summer.
Jean-Michel Seri. How must he feel? That guy was going to go to Barca.
Well,
he could have been at Barca.
This is his Seydorf at Sampdoria year, though. It's just a
really. It feels like they're sort of
masked in relegation.
No, it feels like sort of Vitesse Arnhem years.
On the podcast in 20 years' time, we're going to be like that masterstroke that Seri had when he went to Fulham for a year, got him relegated, and then went to Real Madrid.
He could end up at China. But you know, he's actually a really good option for someone looking to get some value in the transfer market.
Yeah, because they're going to have to sell him.
Yeah, that's a good guy to pick up.
But yeah, I mean, I think the Fulham have been mismanaged from the top since they got promoted. They spent 100 million, was it?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, any club that has three managers in a season, you kind of guess that it's not going to be going too well.
But the thing about them is that the players that were signed were not the choice of Jukanovic. They were the choice of the sporting director, who's the son of the owner.
Oh my goodness.
And that just spells trouble from the start. I mean, if the guy who's not... I mean, yes, you can have sporting directors, but if this is a guy who has no connection to the coach and then you fire the coach for when it all goes wrong, I mean, you've got guys like... you've mentioned Seri, but you've got guys like Schürrle in there as well. Sessegnon hasn't... I mean, he wasn't a new signing, but he hasn't kicked on and reached anywhere near his potential. He's had a big step back, actually.
That's also bad squad management too. It's who you bring in above him to kind of bring him through, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, a lot of those players might be gone in the summer because of clauses in their contract that guard against relegation. And I think Scott Parker has his work cut out. You know, it's typical. You have a team that have the momentum, they go up, and then they massively disappoint, and then they sink like a stone the following season. And I worry.
Could be a Charlton. Could be a Charlton there.
I do worry a bit for Fulham.
Yeah, and the Championship is not. It's not an easy league.
Oh my goodness! People are sharpening their knives, waiting for them to come back down.
Whereas Huddersfield, for example, they are already down. But in some respects, that's good because they can clear their minds of it. And I think the coach is already, and the management there are already planning for how to make a good fist of it next season. And also, being in the Premier League for a start was already a massive achievement.
They pushed it as far. That's the thing with Huddersfield. You look at it and you go, that is a team that maximised its resources. Yeah. You look at it and you go, that team actually was coached as far as it could go. Mm. And I don't want to like use Spurs as a comparison, but you look at Spurs in the recent games, you're like, this is a very well-coached and under-resourced squad.
Yeah.
And it is being, you know, I don't think anyone can really question that Spurs have been absolutely coached the edge of their potential in my opinion.
Huddersfield are achieving,
and I think they're the same.
Huddersfield, absolutely, and Huddersfield are achieving way beyond what they should do on paper.
Before we move on to other leagues, actually, we had a couple of questions about top four and Spurs stuff. So maybe let's cover them now.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. I should have covered them when we were doing Spurs.
Why not? Let's get into it.
Abdullahi Alaki says, it looks like it's directed at you, Michael.
Oh my God, shots fired.
Do you think hashtag Spurs are where Arsenal were when they moved to the Emirates, which was signalled as a massive transformation? But Arsenal are still playing catch up to the big boys in the league. Will Poch regret not seriously considering the United/Madrid job? Thanks.
There's a lot to cover there. Firstly, the Arsenal comparison. I think this is a huge summer for Spurs. They've not signed anyone in the last two transfer windows, as we all know. They need to reinforce that squad. If they don't, then I think the comparison will be very accurate. And if anything, I think it would be worse, because at least Arsenal were still signing some players during that period. I mean, there was a period of austerity, but they added to their squad, right?
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's when the whole Project U thing kicked in.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of, you know, Danielsons and Fran Mareders,
yeah,
and people like that, so Nick Bentners.
Yeah.
I don't think Poch, though, has anything to regret in relation to United or Madrid. Weirdly enough, I think at this unique point in history, with Zidane waiting in the wings and Solskjaer, there was always going to be buyer's remorse over Pochettino, and I think he would have been hung out to dry. So I think, weirdly enough, he's dodged a bullet in both jobs. Yeah. That sounds like a really strange thing to say at this point in history. 2 years earlier, 2 years later, different position. But right now, unfortunately, United and Madrid were both caught up as clubs in this nostalgia haze, memory lane, and Pochettino right now is best advised to sit tight, get some investment.
I totally agree. I mean, I think Poch needs to give Spurs another couple of summer transfer windows to be able to say, okay, I've done my very best with this club. Yeah. And that is all down to Daniel Levy.
He's in the position of Simeone, actually, Atleti.
They're both doing a similar job.
Yeah.
Both Argentinian.
Constrained resources.
Both in new stadiums.
Yeah. Staying on longer than expected. So Simeone's been there far longer than we expected him to be, I think, at Atleti.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway,
sorry,
carry on.
The thing about Spurs, which I think people aren't making enough noise about, is opposed to signing players, the priority should be keeping the players they've got.
Yeah.
Because if they lose any of that squad, the amount of money that it will cost to get anyone near that level.
Yeah.
Is obscene. So, I mean, one thing that was interesting from when Arsenal went through a similar process was Wenger introduced this kind of very almost like communist pay structure. Mm. So it was like everyone kind of got paid a similar amount no matter of their level because they wanted to keep squad unity. Now, you can do that when you have like Andre Santos and people like that playing. But for Spurs, if they could prioritize paying the players that are there the money that they would be, or somewhere near the money that they would be earning elsewhere, as opposed to buying players in, I think that would be really key to keep them there.
The big concern for Spurs is Christian Eriksen and Toby Alderweireld. Both of those have been dubbed contract rebels in the media.
When are their contracts up, though?
Alderweireld has just signed a 1 year extension, but that's really just to maintain his value.
That was a club option that was like a trigger, right?
Exactly, yeah. So he can be sold this summer for 25 million, I believe.
Which is still peanuts.
It's still not a huge amount.
You get
amount.
A lot of money for Eriksen, couldn't you?
That's the big player who I don't think, he didn't really play very well against Liverpool, but I don't think he can be replaced really. Who? I mean, there was talk about James Rodriguez. Okay, let's just be hypothetical for a second. If they did pay the salary that he would demand and any transfer fee that was required, I still don't think he's the right replacement.
But the knock-on as well, though, if someone like James Rodriguez comes in and gets paid something like 250 grand a week,
then
when you've got the rest of the squad there that isn't anywhere near that.
Yeah, then you have to pay Harry Kane. Well, Harry Kane is somewhere near that, but
the problem is Eriksen just knits it together in a way that... Yeah. Almost nobody else does.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
him and Kane are the two most irreplaceable players in that squad. I think Ryan, you're absolutely right. If they need to focus just as hard on keeping the players they've got as they do in adding to the squad.
But they do have a lovely stadium to move into, which is a massive plus. That stadium is amazing.
Well, Arsenal Stadium was also amazing when they moved in.
But it wasn't as good as, I don't think it's anywhere near Spurs.
The acoustics might be mind-blowing.
I think it's just moved on, though. Like at that time when Wenger, because Wenger was crucial in orchestrating that, that was genuinely a game changer.
Yeah, I think Spurs have done a really good job of looking at the negative aspects of new stadiums over the last decade, and they've built something that's brilliant.
They seem to have learned from the mistakes of others.
Will it have noise reduction like Arsenal Stadium?
Oh, That sounds like someone who's only sat in the posh seats.
I can't believe I got away with that hot take. They're going to come for me.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to upload a small audio clip of that.
And they're going to come for
just,
me.
I'm going to send it directly to every single one of Jacob Rees-Mogg's followers.
I'm the Alison Becker of this podcast. I just take these wild risks. There's no danger inside.
You somehow get away with it.
You're due for a Leicester away howler.
Cruyff turn, edge of the 6-yard box.
Hey, right, let's bring it back in a bit, boys. Calm down.
Sorry.
One more question from Mash St. Paddy. The race for third and fourth is now legitimately four teams for two places. With all teams in Europe, who are the two teams most likely to choke should Chelsea put all their eggs in the Europa League basket?
The two that I think are going to qualify United.
I think United are a bit of trouble.
I think United will get third, and I think Spurs will just sneak fourth.
I think we're in a little bit of trouble, United. I'll sound like a bit of a pessimist here, but our midfield is slightly able at the moment, and the problem we have is senior players are not performing. So Matic has been great for us to a large extent, but when Matic is fit, Matic plays, even though Matic is his limitations are in sight. And I just worry we're going to play him a bit too much in the run-in.
What are your thoughts on Pogba at the moment?
My laughter says it all. Pogba is one of the most confusing elite players I've ever encountered. When Pogba is on, he is astonishing. When he's not quite on, it's still hard to tell because he still does stuff that's amazing. But when he's off, I mean, it's not a good look. And the problem actually United have, unfortunately, is that we're not like Man City. We don't have multiple playmakers. You look at City. City have what? Foden, Gundogan, both Silvers, De Bruyne, that can run games. Run games. And we have what? One true orchestrator. And so the problem with that is United structurally, you can close off all the passing lanes if you know that Pogba's going to be in possession. And I think that hurts him because he's a player that has to be the centre of an attacking universe. And United don't yet have a sufficient supporting cast. Having said that, I mean, he himself could and would go up a level if he left. And the fact that Zidane is now flirting openly with him, Zidane is now openly flirting with Pogba, and what Zidane wants, Zidane often eventually gets. So we have to prepare ourselves within 2 years for Pogba maybe to go elsewhere.
But I don't think that's the worst thing in the world.
No, it wouldn't be. And frankly, he'd deserve it because a player of those talents deserves to play in a squad where everyone else is at the level.
But we're talking about Eriksen being irreplaceable for Spurs. Pogba, especially with United's resources, is entirely replaceable, I believe.
I think that's right. I think actually either of them would fit very well into Madrid. Yeah. I think Eriksen would be a quicker, immediate fit, but Pogba would be spectacular.
So do you want to play a game?
Yeah, let's go for it. Go for it. Yeah.
All right.
You're writing things down. Wow, my goodness, this has got serious. Ryan's writing things down, people. It's got real.
Yep. All right, let's go through Spurs's first. We'll do it club by club because I think that'd be nice to keep on top of it.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do it in. So Spurs first. So Spurs' remaining fixtures are the first one: Crystal Palace at home in the new stadium. First game in the new stadium.
Ooh.
Draw.
Musa says draw. Michael says,
I think Spurs win, but just.
There's part of me that thinks Palace might spoil that party.
They spoil a lot of parties.
They do, don't they?
Look what they did to Man City.
But I'm going to be conservative from an Arsenal standpoint and say Spurs win.
Overcompensating. I don't like that, but still carry on.
Okay.
We are who we are. We are who we are. Carry on.
Spurs at home to Huddersfield.
Spurs win.
Yeah, I think we all agree there. Manchester City at home to Spurs.
Ooh, City win.
Yeah.
City win.
So zero. You think City win?
Yep.
I think City.
But a nasty surprise coming for City in the Champions League, I think.
Spurs at home to Brighton.
Spurs win.
Spurs win.
I agree. Spurs at home to West Ham.
Ooh, do you know what? I think that's a draw, actually.
Yeah, I think a draw because Spurs often struggle against West Ham.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a draw as well. We're kind of pretty much on agreement so far.
That's why I get the big bucks.
Spurs away to Bournemouth.
Spurs win.
Yeah, I think Spurs win.
Yeah, Spurs tend to do well there, right?
It's got 2-1 written all over it.
Spurs at home to Everton.
Spurs win again.
I think that's right. Spurs win.
Spurs win?
Yeah.
Spurs win. Right, let's go on to... We'll total them all up.
Although I have given Spurs 2 draws there, and I don't think they've drawn a single game this season.
Only draw was against Arsenal.
Oh yeah, of course.
So Arsenal are playing ahead of record. We're recording ahead of Arsenal against Newcastle, which is at the Emirates.
I think Rafa might pull off a point here.
I think so too.
You both think a draw. I think a win. And I'll tell you why. Because Arsenal have only won more points off Everton in the Premier League than Newcastle at home. So, well, speaking of Everton, Arsenal away to Everton on the weekend.
Everton are going to win that.
This is the catfish. The derbies of all catfish derbies.
Yeah, the
super catfish show.
Draw.
Oh, that's genius. You came up with that in real time.
I did. Just straight off the dome.
That's a hashtag. That's a
Michael thinks a draw. Musa says...
super catfish. I can see the emojis in my head.
At Bad Girl Rai Rai, if you want to send me the super praise.
Someone has to send you memes.
Musa, quick.
Everton going to win that.
I think Everton will win that as well. Arsenal away to Watford.
Oh,
poor Arsenal.
Watford draw. It'll be a draw.
Michael?
Draw.
You can see Watford just 2-1-ing it. I think it'll be a draw. I know you've got that feeling, don't you? It's a Watford win, isn't it? You think it's a Watford win?
I think Watford are going to win.
I know. Do you know what changed me? Watford win. Watford win, I've got the feeling as
well. You've got a Watford win?
Yeah.
Okay, so then Arsenal at home to Crystal Palace.
They'll win. Arsenal home, Crystal
Three
Palace.
3 points for Arsenal.
Yeah. They're good. They're good against Palace.
Yeah, we all agree. Arsenal away to Wolves.
Draw.
Michael says draw.
Yeah, Wolves, no.
You think Wolves are going to win?
Wolves draw.
Wolves draw. Stop saying Wolves draw because it's both teams draw.
No, but when Wolves draw, it feels like Wolves win because that's what Wolves do.
Like Wolves eat.
Wolves, exactly.
They devour.
they devour us in the cup.
I think Arsenal are going to win this game.
Okay, good for him.
I think.
Good for you.
Good for me. Yeah.
Bully for you.
Cool story, right?
Bully for you, yeah. Cool story.
Arsenal away to Leicester. See, I don't think Arsenal are going to win. I think Leicester are going to win this game.
Oh, gosh. Vardy against Mustafi. They can't end well.
If Mustafi starts that game, I'm done.
It's 2-1 Leicester, isn't it?
I think Arsenal will win.
Okay. Musa?
Yeah, I think Leicester will win.
Okay. Arsenal at home to Brighton.
Arsenal.
I also agree. And Arsenal away to Burnley last day of the season.
Arsenal.
Musa says Arsenal.
Yeah.
They'll just throw everything at that.
So we all say Arsenal.
And okay. Burnley are not the defensive force they were.
Let's move on to Musa's beloved Wolfsburg. No, Manchester United.
Yay.
Right, Manchester United away to Wolves.
Draw.
I think Wolves are going to win that game. Do I want to open that can of worms?
Be true to Ryan. Don't be affected by
just
these
do
peripheries.
You.
Be true to yourself.
Manchester United at home to West Ham.
United win.
Yeah,
we're all in agreement. Manchester United away to Everton.
Draw. Goodison's a horrible place to get a result.
I think Manchester United are going to win that game.
I think United as well.
And Moose thinks that Everton will draw. Everton draw.
We've got
bigger fish to fry at home to Manchester City.
I think City will win that just because City will be desperate.
I think a draw.
I think City.
They'll be desperate, that's why.
Manchester United at home to Chelsea.
United win.
Yeah,
I agree. Manchester United home win. Away to Huddersfield.
United
win.
It's going to be one of those casual...
What, schools out?
Yeah.
Schools out, yeah.
And then at home to Cardiff last day of the season.
United win.
Yep, I agree. And then finally, Chelsea. So
I've got a funny feeling they'll finish strong.
Right, Chelsea at home to Brighton.
Chelsea win.
We're all in agreement. Chelsea at home to West Ham.
Chelsea win.
I think West Ham are going to get a point. Chelsea away to Liverpool.
Liverpool winning that.
At Liverpool? Yeah, Liverpool.
I think Liverpool will win. Chelsea at home to Burnley.
Chelsea win.
Michael?
Yeah,
why not? Chelsea away to Manchester United. Oh, hang on, we've already discussed that. We think Man United are going to win.
Yep, so I do anyway.
We will put 0. Chelsea at home to Watford.
Chelsea win.
I think a draw.
I also think a draw. And away to Leicester, last day of the season.
Draw.
I think Leicester.
Ooh.
That's a spicy one. Spicy prediction there.
Just because I expect Chelsea to go quite far in the Europa League, and I just think they're going to have their eye on different prizes.
I think it's going to be a draw. Right, let's take a break. I'll get the calculator out.
Wonderful. Looking forward.
Right, we're back from the break.
Right.
So,
well, the results.
Right, Musa, you think Man United and Spurs will finish level on points with 75. So they'll be third and fourth. Chelsea, fifth, 73 points. Arsenal, sixth, 71 points. All right.
That feels reasonable.
Michael, Manchester United finishing third on 78 points. Spurs finishing fourth on 77 points, Arsenal finishing fifth on 76 points, and Chelsea finishing sixth on 70 points.
Yeah, I just think Chelsea are going to go for it in the Europa League.
Mm.
And I think they'll get a bit distracted.
I think... How am I the only one who thinks Spurs are going to finish third?
Squad depth.
I meant being the only Arsenal fan. Spurs third, 77 points. Man United fourth, 76 points. Arsenal fifth, 75 points. Chelsea sixth, 69 points. So I'm the only person who thinks Chelsea aren't going to get into the 70s.
But we're all broadly in agreement then that United and Spurs
are going to finish third and fourth. This is so depressing. I didn't expect it to be this sad.
How did it die?
That means Arsenal got to go and win the Europa League now, which is terrifying.
Oh no, big club having to win a trophy. Oh no. My heart bleeds.
Whoa.
How awful.
You sound like very much like someone who grew up in the Alex Ferguson era of Manchester United.
How awful that a big club should have to win a trophy at the end of a season.
No, I mean in order to qualify for the Champions League, Musa.
You're Arsenal. You can do it.
Should we talk about the Bundesliga?
You're Arsenal.
Can we do it on our own?
You're Arsenal. You can do it.
Speaking of big clubs needing to win a trophy.
Dortmund. Sancho Corner comes up with a crucial assist in the last minute. The second goal for Paco Alcácer.
Yeah. This game was all about Paco Alcácer. I mean, firstly, it's worthwhile saying it was a terrible game. Really, really dull. Dortmund just didn't look up for it, lethargic.
He missed a good chance earlier on, didn't he, Alcácer, as well?
Yeah, I mean, he put one just over the bar, and it just looked like it was heading for a 0-0 and another disappointing result for Dortmund. Alcácer got them out of jail. An amazing free kick, which Wolfsburg were complaining that it wasn't actually a free kick. But
it was a free kick.
Yeah, they got it anyway and scored it. And then Alcácer scored another one in stoppage time and they won 2-0. Amazing result for them. And now... Because Bayern dropped 2 points at Freiburg, Dortmund are back in the driving seat.
They can get a draw in the Clásico and still be fine.
Well, this is it.
They don't have to win the Clásico now, which
is... Yeah, this Saturday is Bayern versus Dortmund in Munich. And I mean, I don't think there has been a bigger game in the Bundesliga for 7 years, 8 years.
But yeah. Dortmund deserve this. They deserve to be back in it. They have dropped points after Christmas. And it's funny because their dropping of points has actually paralleled with Alcácer's slight cooling off. Because before Christmas, he was scoring it. And other worlds.
They also had a load of injuries,
True.
And Marco Reus wasn't there on the weekend. He had the birth of his first child.
Yeah. And they're young as well. Like, you know, they do have experience.
They're ahead of schedule, basically, which I think they're.
It's crucial that Reus comes back into this team because he knits everything together. Yeah, I mean, they were really missing him on the weekend. And as good as Sancho is, as exciting as he is, and as devastating as Alcácer can be on his day, they need Reus just to keep it all in check and keep that cohesion in attack.
For sure.
So for him to return for the Clásico, that's absolutely huge. And, you know, I think Dortmund could, well, let's say avoid defeat in the Clásico.
I think that's right.
I mean, they've been given a second chance, really, by Bayern not finishing off Freiburg there.
They really got out of jail, didn't they?
I
hope the Clásico is a better game than the Dortmund game, though. That was terrible.
Well, the last Clásico was pretty good.
They had the best thing about that game was the pigeon on the pitch in Dortmund, Wolfsburg.
Yeah.
Can I say?
He was everywhere. He was like, his heat map would have been amazing.
The movement off the ball.
He was even in the net.
Yeah, he was in the goal chilling.
If that pigeon had played in defence midfield for Germany at the last World Cup, they got second round. I'm not going to name any names. Not going to name any names, but there were certain players in that Germany national team, you know, didn't move as well as that pigeon did. Yeah. So there's not any names. We know who they are.
Exciting times in the Bundesliga. And also...
always firing shots at that guy.
We should mention Eintracht Frankfurt as well. They picked up a 3-0 win and they're now in the Champions League places and they've knocked out Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are just in free fall. They really are struggling.
They never recovered from thrashing Munich, did they?
And Leipzig are right in there as well. They won 5-0 against Hertha Berlin. I really want to see Eintracht Frankfurt in the Champions League next year, especially if they can keep those front three together.
The word if is doing a lot of heavy lifting. I know what you mean. I'd love to see it, but Jovic is gone, isn't he? He's got to be gone.
There's a clause in his contract that they don't have to sell him.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. That's interesting. How so?
I don't know.
Are they
a club? Sorry, I'm interested. Are they the kind of club that can afford not to sell players?
It's a rich part of Germany. They're all good there.
But I mean, there's rich and there's rich. I mean, yeah. Jovic.
Banking district.
They're going to throw a lot of coin at him.
Yeah, they might come under pressure to sell him. If they can keep him, Haller, and
if Messi gets your WhatsApp, if Messi sends you WhatsApp, okay, come over to...
Well, Real Madrid are apparently interested in re-signing, but Frankfurt are, I think, alongside Dortmund, the most exciting team in the league this year.
Agreed, yeah, agreed.
Where are we going next? Should we go to Amsterdam?
Big game.
I'd love to go to Amsterdam in real life.
I feel like just
not been for a while.
I feel like just hopping on the plane before Brexit comes along. I was actually looking at, this sounds really ridiculous, I was on lastminute.com last night, I'm not joking, looking at European cities to visit just in the week before No Deal. Yeah. Anyway, but back to the point, Amsterdam, let's go there, Ajax PSV.
That was a good game.
It was a very good game.
Ended 3-1.
Yeah. And what I love about it is the players who stepped up in that game, Tadic knitting it all together, and Neres just made his debut for Brazil, was instrumental in the last two goals, won the penalty, and then clinched it with the winner.
It was also the most outrageous red card in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so funny. It was
a high studded roundhouse.
And the guy that did it didn't even complain. He knew.
Yeah, he knew. When he got the yellow, I think he was a bit like...
Huh. There was a moment when he stood over the... No, normally when someone fouls, when they stand over and they're going to say something nasty, he was just like... You could say he was like, mate, that was a bit of a shocker.
And this is Tadic, by the way, who was deemed surplus to requirements at Mark Hughes' Southampton.
Just play everything
through
him.
Yeah. Where are they now?
I know. Just play everything through him.
I mean, that win for Ajax takes them 2 points behind PSV with 7 games left. So
it's an exciting run in there.
Shows what kind of season PSV have been having, doesn't it?
Mm. Speaking of red cards, let's go to Glasgow.
Oh my goodness.
For the Old Firm derby.
Didn't back in the Souness sort of Old Firm years, weren't there like 2 or 3 red cards like for Rangers?
Oh yeah, that was standard.
There is something, can I just say?
Minimum.
There is something so, I know we're in the age of like marketing, whatever. There is something so refreshingly old school and yet on brand about a red card in an Old Firm game.
There's something about how much these two teams hate each other.
It's incredible, isn't it?
Well, it runs so much deeper than football.
Yeah, exactly, which, you know, getting into dodgy territory. But from the football side of it, it's because Rangers have not been Rangers for the last, what, nearly a decade, really? And now they're back in the Scottish Premier League.
And they're really quite good.
Yeah, and you know, you've got someone like Steven Gerrard there. You've got Jermaine Defoe playing for them. Although, I forgot about completely.
Rangers have always made that kind of signing, that kind of left-field sign. They've always been quite good at that.
Giovanni Van Bronckhorst.
True.
Mikel Arteta.
But you know what's funny about the Old Firm as well? What's always amazing about the Old Firm derby is how you've got players who are not affiliated at all, who are completely from like other side of the world, who really get into the derby in a very obsessive way. Mm. That's always what amazes me, like how you can get someone from completely out of town who gets swept up in the fervour. And that's what happened, isn't it? Mm. I mean, Rangers should have had a very early red. Elbow on Scott Brown went unpunished. Scott Brown again at the middle of all of the drama.
Oh, you know, when there's drama... Scott Brown's there.
He's one of those guys who's going to be a club legend, isn't he? Like at Celtic.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, just because he's an iconic
wind-up merchant.
Yeah.
He's just mad Aggie.
I was going to use my first ever swear word on the Rabona podcast, but I won't.
I believe we call them
an S-house, we call them.
That's not swearing, just say shit house.
It's always Ryan. It's the most explicit content.
I don't trust people who don't swear.
Me neither. I do swear a lot off the podcast, but not on it. Anyway, but yeah, so, but can I just say, before we go further, good win for Celtic, ultimately a stronger side. But I just want to say, Steven Gerrard is really doing a fantastic job. And I think we don't give enough credit sometimes to footballers who come in and really test themselves in new jobs. Lampard has tested himself, Gerrard's tested himself. I think actually in some ways, Gerrard had the harder job.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, testing himself.
I've got to respect that. I mean, I wasn't going to mention him actually, but I think that particularly Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard have really shown something.
The golden generation.
Didn't Gerrard call on the player who was sent off to donate his wages to...
Really?
Yeah.
I love stuff like that.
To the Rangers fans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I love stuff like that.
Leading by example. Stevie G.
Yeah. Good for him.
Women's Super League.
Stevie G was never sent off, was he?
No.
Never 30 seconds you know, after
I'm in enough trouble. Yeah.
Never.
I'm in enough trouble already in this podcast.
I want to talk about Women's Super League. Arsenal beat Birmingham away, which was tricky. I watched that game. It was a tough one.
Where does that put them now?
2 points clear of Man City, who got a last-minute winner against Liverpool. Arsenal have got 3 games left. Man City have got 2.
Right.
So Arsenal could win it before the last game of the season, which is... Arsenal, Manchester City.
Oh my
Arsenal.
Goodness. Ooh. Yeah, they better clean that out quick.
It'll be their first title, I think, 7 years, Arsenal.
They guaranteed
Champions League qualification for the first time in a few years, which is big for Arsenal.
To win, they've got to win the last three.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, it's looking good. Chelsea are still in third, but they're in the semi-final of the Champions League, so I think that'll be fine.
Can I say to anyone, listen to this, like, often it's very hard. I mean, a lot of you will support your teams, either Chelsea or Fulham. A lot of those clubs have got women's teams, and the tickets are always way cheaper The football is fantastic. The game's growing so fast. Just go along. I mean, I keep talking about this, but I went to this Wolfsburg game and the atmosphere, the vibe was absolutely amazing. You would not, you know, the diversity of the crowd, you had everyone from 15 years old up to like grandparents, all genders. The travelling support from Lyon was actually a load of guys, young guys, you know, sort of
they're like early ultras, to mid-20s. Like the, French, the French teams are really, really rowdy.
I had such an amazing time. I just say, look, just... if you've got a night off, just wander along. Same as you would go to a reserve or youth game, because you'll have a fantastic time.
Sounds great.
Yeah, definitely.
Get involved.
We should probably wrap because we've gone on long. But we had two short podcasts last week, so I thought we'd...
Yeah, it's good, you know, to go long. It's good to have Michael back
as
well.
Do an extended set, an extended version.
Good to see Michael.
Last week's Rabona selects... well, there was two, actually. Wendy Renard went up on Wednesday, and then Andrea Pirlo with Marvin Gaye.
Yeah, and I love that one.
That one's steamy.
We've got an absolute beauty coming
sumptuous.
Next.
Yeah, the next one. The
no
next
surprises,
fun
but
to make.
Yeah, for me, a personal favourite.
I'm going to put that up on Thursday, I think. What, have we got anything coming up on the site this week? You writing anything, Michael? Are you going to do something from the Classico, right?
Yeah. I'm hopefully going to be at Bayern versus Dortmund, so yeah, you may see something from
cool.
me after
We
that.
Should probably write something as well.
Yeah, we should do. I think that's it. Absolutely. Okay, then, find us on all social media platforms. Same handle, at RabonaMag. Thank you so much for joining us again. Absolute pleasure. Musa Kwonga, Ryan, and Michael De Silva. Goodbye till next week.
Bye.
Goodbye. See ya.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.